man with the game information. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Giving the news to the nerd generation. Gaming Steve. Give me news.
Give me news.
Give me views.
Give me views.
Gaming Steve.
Gaming Steve. He got the game.
What's to see?
What's to see?
What's to me?
What's to me?
Gaming Steve.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who keeps Yoshi as a family pet. Ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker, and in this week's show, I cover the latest gaming news. My game review this week is Rocket Slime for the Nintendo DS. My retro review is Shining Force for the Genesis, Game Boy Advance, and a few other systems. Then have my new feature, Making the Game, where I tell you how a game is made from very, very beginning to the very, very end. Then I have Name That Game, by contest where I play a snippet from a game and you have to tell me what it is. Then I have Show Mail, and then Final Thoughts. So, hey everybody, how you doing? Yeah, I know, I haven't been around in a while, but this time, probably the best excuse of all is that my wife had a baby. I have a new baby boy, and between a two-year-old who is going through the terrible twos and a brand new baby boy, things have gotten a little crazy, to say the least. My life is already pretty nuts between all the things I'm doing and doing a new game and all this other stuff, and then this, and whoa, boy, things really got kind of nuts. But things are going to finally get a little bit more under control. One of the things I've done is actually sort of worked out a schedule where I can actually get Gaming Steve podcast done. Because how I do it is I just do it in my apartment. And, you know, one of the things when you live in Manhattan is that you really don't have a lot of, like, private space. It's not like I can just go into a garage and do, you know, the Gaming Steve podcast. Or I can just go, well, right now the office I'm working in is sort of a large studio, so there's no real private area for there. So it's just not like, you know, I don't really have a room to myself. I live in a pretty large two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, but with a wife and two kids, it gets pretty small pretty fast. So because I actually just tried to do the game podcast but had two kids screaming in the background, I'm now in the bathroom. So it might be a sound a little echoey here right now, but this is probably, it's not exactly the best place you want to do it. A lot of places, you actually, one of the best places to do a podcast if you're trying to do one at home is actually, believe it or not, the closet. And the reason is because there's a lot of soft sounds. You don't have a lot of ambience, a lot of bouncing off of surfaces. Unfortunately, I have a bathroom that has nothing but hard surfaces. So I don't know how this thing is going to sound. Hopefully, it's going to be okay. But the other thing is I've now taken out a time in my schedule every day to update the site as well. So hopefully I'll be able to update the site a lot more often now. I basically have made time in my schedule for the Gaming Steve podcast and website. So it's going to become a higher priority because before I just had no time. I mean, I just really don't have any time to do the show, to do the site or anything like that. But I'm now making it a priority, working out time with my family and my job to actually now fit this in instead of sort of doing it whenever. So do expect it to see a lot more frequently than before. I might change the format a little. You know, I'm still, whoops, as I drop a Game Boy Advance cartridge on the floor. I will probably try to keep the show pretty much the same, but I might have to shorten it just if time gets a little too crazy. And as you, many of you know, it just takes a long time to do a show, just preparing and post and all that. But let's get to the game news, because there was an awful lot that I missed these last couple of weeks. So let's get right to that, shall we?
Gaming news! Gaming news!
So this week there was just so much news, or should I say the last couple of weeks, there's just been so much news. I tried to go through and get as much as I could. I probably missed a couple of stories, and people were like, you know, oh, Steve, why don't you cover this? Why don't you cover that? I did my best here. I couldn't get everything. Otherwise, I could do a five-hour show just on the news in the last couple of weeks, because there's just been so much. So I'm going to try to hit a little bit of everything, touch a little bit on everything, and, well, hit it all. So let's start with, I don't know if I do this in chronological order, but it's a little weird this time, so sort of a loose chronological order. I have the Wii, because the Wii conference was first. So I have the Wii. They announced that it's going to be 250 $50. It's coming to America November 19th, which is 2 days after the PlayStation 3. That's a Sunday. And that it's going to come in North and South America. Let's see what else. There's going to be over 4 million. They expect this to be shipped by the end of 2006, which is nearly double, if not double, the number of PS3s Sony's going to ship. But I'll talk about that more in a little while. It's going to come with, let's see, approximately about 25 games available at launch. Well, they say more than 25 games available at launch, but I think that also includes virtual console games. First-party games are going to be $50. You'll have web surfing, photo editing, two new channels, a whole bunch of fun things like that. The classic games are going to have NES games, SNES games, Nintendo 64 games. They're going to range anywhere from $5 to $10. They imagine they're going to be like Donkey Kong, Zelda, Mario franchises. There's going to be a total of 60 by the end of the year. They're going to also come with Wii Sports. Oh, so maybe I'm wrong about that. If there's 60 games coming and 25, wow, are they really having 25 games? Have I been in the dark that long? I got to check out to see the launch titles for this thing. But yeah, Wii Sports is coming with it. It's okay. I played Wii Sports. Hopefully they cleaned it up a little. It was really hard before when I was playing it. It was, you know, if this is sort of a pick up and play for, you know, casual gamers, this thing was way too hard. So hopefully they redid it quite a bit. But let's see what else. We have Twilight Princess, which is going to be available on November 19th. But the GameCube version is not going to come out until December sometime. So a little bit of a... It's a little annoying, actually. So you have to get it. If you want the new Twilight Princess game, you're going to have to get the Wii. But no, it's smart business. Excite Truck is going to be available day one. I really don't know how good that game was. I played the demo at E3, and it was pretty blah. But the new Metroid Prime 3 game won't be available until 2007. And there's also going to be some web surfing capabilities, like a home computer. Wii's Opera browser is going to be in it. I believe it's going to be free for a little while. Eventually, they're going to charge for it. And a whole bunch of other fun little things. But I have a lot to cover. So, well, yeah, one of the few little points of interest here, you know, the price is a good price, $250. You know, some people are upset that it was not $199, but then I guarantee it, if they priced it $200, then people are going to be like, why wasn't it $149? I don't understand. So, you know what, people are always never happy. But you know what, $250, I really wonder if the Sony's PS3 was more expensive or less expensive. If that thing was like $300-$400, maybe the Wii would have only been $199, but now it's $250. They're going to say it's going to make money from day one. They're going to make a profit from every single one they sell. And I believe it. And it's a small unit. It doesn't have a lot of parts in it. They say they're going to have no problem getting them out to people. And again, I actually believe them. And the reason is that they're very successful. They've had a lot of time and a lot of planning and with releasing the DS, the Game Boys, and all of those other systems. And they do a very similar strategy. They actually market their games and create their consoles the same way Apple does their iPods. Is they do very small runs. They don't do these massive runs. Well, they do larger runs than say iPods, but they do these relatively small runs, and they only have just enough consoles really in demand or in supply as there is demand. So they don't have these huge stockpiles all over the place where they just keep cranking these things out nonstop. Because they're much smaller and because they're a lot less complex to make, they're a lot easier for them to make them as they need them. So, you know, that's one of the things, a big advantage of actually going the other way and actually making a simpler system as opposed to the absolute cutting edge, because then all of a sudden it gets really hard to make parts. I mean, if you think about it, when I was talking to Peter Moore about the Xbox 360, he was saying that the big issue was, what was the big issue? I forgot. Was it the hard drives? It was either the hard drives or was it the power units. There was like one thing that was holding it up. And if you have 700 components in your Xbox or your PlayStation or your Nintendo console system, and if you can get 699 of those parts and one person can't get the part to you, well, then you're out of luck. So, I mean, it's really, you know, you have all these other, you know, they don't make these things themselves. You know, they get them from suppliers, and they can get them from dozens, if not 100 different people. They all have to get to them on time. There's an amount of, you know, the correct delivery times, the correct amounts, to the correct places. I mean, you can imagine how crazy, insane, complex that is. So, Yeah, it's just simple, you know, makes sense after, you know, if you think about it. It's like you just have a smaller unit with a lot less parts, especially moving parts, which break a lot easier than static parts, and voila, you have something that's easier to put together, easier to assemble, easier to get out, easier to test as well. I will be interested to see how the Wii does compare to, oh, I don't know, the Xbox 360, which, by the way, mine broke just this week. So, and I was the last one of all my friends. Every person I know, their 360 broke. Mine just broke this week, which was pretty annoying. So that is Nintendo. Let's get to the next one, PS3, because I got a lot of news, and I have a huge stack here, so I got to go a little faster. The PS3, yeah, big news is that they're not going to get as many as they said. They originally said they're going to be 6 million. They were going to launch them all at the same time worldwide, and it's not going to happen. There's only going to have 400,000 PS3s available for initial launch in the U.S., 100,000 in Japan, when it launches November 11th, November 17th in the United States. And in Europe, it's going to come in early 2007. I believe March is what they said. So by the end of the year, they hopefully want to hit 2 to 2.4 million units, with 1 to 1.2 million of those in North America. So, yeah, I know the Europeans are really, really upset about this. But, you know, I said this in my site today, is that, you know, I really just don't feel that the PlayStation 3 is something you need at launch. And you know what? I even said that in my original review of the Xbox 360. I said that it's a great system, but you didn't really need it at launch. Now it's really, you know, there's a lot of good games out for it. It's definitely a very, very compelling system. There's a lot to play on it, a lot to do. Xbox Live Arcade, a lot of great games. But, you know, it's one of those, when I first bought it and I got it and I played it, and then I didn't. I did not play it for quite a while until games came out. And the same thing, the PS3, I feel it's not necessarily a launch system that you need to get right away. You need to plop down that money. I mean, they're going to sell these things out, no problem. But, you know, a lot of people are pretty upset at Sony for overestimating and then saying, you know, because, you know, some of these, you know, the publishers, I'm looking at this, Activision has 3 launch titles, Electronic Arts has 4 or 5, Take-Two has 3 titles by the end of 2007. You know, those guys, their money, last year, they were really angry at Sony. Ugh. Microsoft. I knew I'd get it in there, right? They're really angry at Microsoft because they just couldn't get the 360s out. And if they can't get the 360s out, these companies can't get their games sold. If they can't get their games sold, they can't make money. So they're really dependent heavily. There's a lot of people dependent on this. The video game stores are very dependent on them. The, you know, developers are dependent on them. And they have to stick to their guns. And if they're saying, and they're saying these things publicly, not just to the press and not just to the public, but to their developers, saying, you know, we're going to have 6 million have worldwide distribution, you know, well, that really affects these people quite a bit. You know, they have to start looking into getting ad buys in European magazines ahead of time, and they have to do that way ahead of time. You have to actually put together your campaigns. You actually have to start building the games. You know, people think it's like, oh, it's no big deal. You know, what's the big deal? Are they just, you know, they're going to push these things back or just not have as many? No, it's a huge deal, okay? Like, these game publishers, they get furious when this stuff happens because they have an entire launch team, you know, ready to put together all these ad campaigns, get all this stuff out, buying out ad space on television boards everywhere, you know, magazines, you name it. And this totally messes them up. And not only that, they have to give out their revenue numbers. And sure enough, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen this year as much as it did last year, but they have to, like, reevaluate. They have to tell the street the new numbers for their, you know, profits. They do not like, you know, the market does not like it when people have to, reevaluate how much money they're going to make. And it can even go down to the smallest amount, and their stock will get just hammered when that stuff happens. So, you know, I don't know. It's not a good thing. I don't know why they overestimate. You know, once again, rumors are it's the green diode, the blue diode for the Blu-ray, and that's sort of holding them up. The blue laser diode production problems is what, you know, the big rumor is. Which, you know what? I believe it, because those things are very, very precise. They have to be done perfectly. All I know is that I'm probably not going to get one to launch, but I'm going to get one probably 2007. Of course, I say that now, but I guarantee it. If I'm in the store and I see a PS3 just sitting there on the shelf, I guarantee I'm going to buy that thing, because you know what? I can sell it on eBay. Oh, I'm kidding. No, I wouldn't sell it on eBay. Oh, yeah, I would. No, actually, I would keep it and then play it for like 5 minutes. I'd play Resistance Fall of Man, which was a pretty fun game, I have to say. And then I would probably not play it for like 6 months. But I tell you, there's some really good-looking titles coming out for the PS3 in 2007. But you know what? Final Fantasy, what is it, 12 is coming out? I'm looking forward to that. I think that's going to take up a lot of my time. That thing's been getting just sick reviews, great reviews. Next up, we have the Xbox 360. They had their X06 conference in Barcelona, Spain. I really wanted to go to this thing, but, you know, when your wife is 9 months pregnant, there's no way you're going to Barcelona, Spain, or the Tokyo Game Show, or the Austin's Game Conference, or PAX. You know, it's like all these great conferences I couldn't go to. But next year I'm going. Next year, family vacation to Tokyo, where we just happen to be there when the Tokyo Game Show is there. And then another family vacation to Austin, Texas. Yay! Okay, I don't know about that. But, you know, that show actually sounded pretty good. I have never been to that show, but it sounded pretty great. And PAX is getting nuts. I gotta definitely go to that thing. What do we got here? A whole bunch of things. Let's see. Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh are going to create two new games for Xbox 360 and Xbox Live. Well, the first one's Bungie Studios. It's Halo 3, so they're going to put their input in. I'm not sure exactly how much they're making of that game, but they're going to have a credit of some sort. And so, you know, whatever. I don't really know if that's going to sell the Halo franchise. It's Peter Jackson. But if he does another game, another original IP, you know, I'm definitely going to be interested. I love Peter Jackson's movies. Halo Wars, all brand new real-time strategy game exclusively for the 360, is being made by Ensemble Studios, the creators of Age of Empires. Big surprise there. I actually read that and said, what the heck took them so damn long? I would have thought they would have had, like, Halo everything by now, you know? They would have had Halo RTS, they would have had Halo sports games, Halo puzzle games. I mean, they should just have Halo everything. Okay, I don't want to drive the brand into the ground, but they've had Halo, which came out in, was it 2001? Then they had Halo 2, and that's about it. You know, they really just haven't had that much. They really could do a lot more with the brand. So I'm surprised and pleasantly happy. Is that correct? Well, that they're coming out with a Halo RTS. And it's great to see there's more RTSs coming for the Xbox 360. I'm surprised it's not coming out or it's probably going to come out for Vista later, just not right away. You know, like 2 years later it's going to come out or something. Let's see what else. Rockstar and Take-Two announced downloadable episodes of Grand Theft Auto 4, two exclusive episodes with new content. Yeah, it's nothing major there. Splinter Cell 5 Conviction is only coming out on the Xbox 360. That is that's pretty big. That's probably Microsoft signing a nice exclusive deal with Ubisoft. That's going to be big news. BioShock, a really good first-person shooter. It looks, or a first-person shooter slash puzzler, however you want to call it. It looks really great. That's coming out for the 360, and of course, it's coming out for Microsoft Windows. Project Gotham Racing 4 is coming out, no problem there. Here we go. Now let's get to the really big announcements. Banjo-Kazooie 3. Ah, Banjo-Kazooie. I love those games. Oh my god, I love those games. Banjo is so much fun. I've played the original so many times. I might just have to whip it out and play it again. I just love that game. Banjo-Kazooie 3 is coming out for the Xbox 360. Thank God. I love that game. New MMO, Marvel Universe Online for both the 360 and Windows Vista, is being made by Cryptic Studios, the same guys who did City of Heroes and City of Villains. That is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. I love City of Heroes and City of Villains. You know, it's MMO light, I will admit, but boy, when you get together with friends and adventure, that game is great. On top of that, the guys at Cryptic, they're huge Marvel fans. You know, they actually, I do know they do like Marvel even more than DC. It's sort of their preference until they got sued. But I guess Microsoft came in. It's a weird dichotomy there. You have Marvel and Microsoft and Cryptic all joining together to get this game made. But You know, I have total faith in those guys because this has got to be their dream come true. And they, if they, anyone could do it, those guys can. We have Doom coming out, Sensible Soccer on the Xbox Live Arcade. And then finally, the Xbox 360 HD DVD player, which is coming out for $200 in North America. Let's see, 200 euros and 130 pounds in the UK, France, and Germany. So yeah, the HD DVD player, I've actually seen HD DVDs as well as Blu-ray, and you know what? You can wait. I mean, it's cool. It is definitely, there's a slight, you know, improvement in picture quality. The big difference you'll notice is the menus. The menus are significantly better on HD DVDs and Blu-rays. They're really, really good stuff. Because the programming for HD, for DVDs is really, really basic. You know, it's incredibly basic stuff. I've actually made a couple of DVDs in my time, and it's just professional, and it's really very little you can do with the menus. I haven't looked at the programming for the new systems, but I imagine they're a lot more sophisticated because the stuff I've seen is just great. But those are sort of the big news with those three systems. You know, there's a lot of new previews and a lot of new games coming out. So many, I lost track for all these systems. But, you know, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of cool new stuff. Let's get to all the other gaming news because, yeah, as usual, I'm starting to go long. Seaman gets a sequel. Get it? Sequel? Okay, anyhow, Seaman, which was one of the... Okay, if you take quirky, weird, insane, crazy Japanese games and you want to find out what the craziest, most insane Japanese game was of all time, well, not all time, but at least that I can remember, it was Seaman. This came out in 1999 for the Dreamcast, and it was just nuts. It was like, it was a game, it came with a microphone, and it was narrated by Leonard Nimoy, and you had to basically instruct your Seaman creature, which was half man, half fish some of the time. Other times it was half man, half lizard, frog type thing. It was a weird game. It's hard to explain. And he would ask you questions and sort of do psychological profiles on you while you can do things like pick him up in your hand and he would sing and you can torture him or tell him jokes. Or it was beyond weird, and I loved it. That game was fantastic. There's not much known about the game. It's coming out for the PlayStation 2. There's no date released when it's going to come out. It's going to, once again, use the voice recognition system. It's going to come with a microphone so you can talk to him. I can only imagine how awesome this game could be with the PlayStation 2 generation technology. This thing is just going to be great. I know this time, unfortunately, it's not quite that well. Hopefully it'll be weird, but it's sort of a proto-man instead of the Seaman. But if it's called Seaman 2, there's got to be some sea aspect to it. But hopefully he'll be the same guy who's, it's weird, he used to insult you. It's cool, he'd ask you questions about yourself, and then later, you know, weeks later, he would actually bring up the topics. Like he'd ask you if you were like single or if you had a family or when your birthday was or your favorite color. And then like weeks or months later, he would mention something in regards to that. And it was really great. It was a fantastic interactive experience. So I'm really looking forward to that. What else we got? Oh yeah, another Wii. I've sort of got a whole bunch of things mixed in here. The first party games are going to be region free. So that's right, the first party games will not have a regional lockout. This was confirmed by Wired News. So that's great. To say the least, that's fantastic. I love that the DS is totally region free. I've sort of gotten addicted to buying Japanese titles for my DS, and unfortunately I don't know what most of these are going on and what's doing, but it sure is fun getting these Japanese titles, and I'm going to be doing the same thing for my Wii. And right now, by the way, if you're also like me, or if you like Phoenix Wright, you can now buy Phoenix Wright 2. It's coming out at the end of the month. It's either coming out at the end of this month. No, I think it's coming at the very beginning of November. But those guys in Japan, man, they're so smart. They have the Japanese and the English in the game. So you can change the language and play the whole game in English, even though it's a Japanese release version. So you can go to a place like PlayAsia.com. I buy from them all the time, never had a problem. They're great. You could go there, pre-order, buy the game, ship it here, even though it's in Japanese. The whole game will be in English, and you can play Phoenix Wright 2, even though it doesn't come out for the United States for several months. And I don't even know when it's coming out for Europe. So if you're like me and you love the original Phoenix Wright, go do that now. And it's cheap, too. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's like $30. Shipping and handling is like $3 if you do like ground. You know, it's great. I do it all the time. What else we got? Oh, more great games. Psychonauts, Blood Rain are going to be available from Steam. So right now, if you go on Steam, you can get Blood Rain for $10, as well as the sequel for $20. Those are okay games. Advent Rising for $20, which I heard really mixed things. I heard that the script and just so much of that game was fantastic, but so much of the game was also not so fantastic. But Psychonauts, which was the Gaming Steve Game of the Year for 2005, one of my favorite games of all time, one of the best written games of all time, one of the best games voiceovers of all time, period. Period. End of discussion, is going to be on Steam. If you did not play this game, you have to go buy this game and play it. Or wait till it comes out for Steam later this month in October. No price yet, though. I don't know what it's going to cost. But seriously, if you like video games and you want to see one of the best games of all time, you have to play this game. It did not do well. I do not know why. I do not know anyone who did not love this game who played it. It is phenomenal. Do you hear me, people? Play Psychonauts. Next, Bully. Bully, the upcoming game that you've probably heard about once or twice from Take-Two, got a teen rating from the ESRB. Oh my God, this was great. I read this. I was so happy when I read this. This really put a big damper on all those upcoming protests and everything else I can only imagine that was going to happen with this game. Yeah, it got a teen rating, which means that anyone can pretty much go and buy this game. You don't need parents' permission. You can just be 13 or older and go into the store and buy it. And it is supposedly appropriate for teenagers. And you know what? I believe it. From everything I've read, I've spoken, I actually haven't played it, even though I know the Take-Two office is like right down the street from my apartment. I haven't actually bugged those guys to try to play it because it comes out in 2 weeks. I'll just play it then. But I talked to some of my friends, like at Evil Avatar and a few other places, they have played it, and you know, it plays a lot like The Warriors from what I hear, but it's just like, you know, it's violent, but it's very toned down violence. You know, you're not really killing people. I mean, you're like, you know, hawking loogies at them, and like, I don't know, you get into like fist fights, but there's no real blood or anything. It's nothing worse than you would get into, well, in regular school. And there's teasing. And not only that, you're supposedly, well, parts of it, you're the good guy who's trying to prevent bullying from other guys. So, you know, again, this is really just something that's trying to drive political agendas. This game's going to come out. There's going to be probably a big stink for like a week or two, and then it's going to totally disappear because, you know, there's really not that much to do when the game really doesn't, you know, this is one of those games that's like pre-rated. You know, this was a game that people were judging and using as a focal point for people to, you know, say how evil video games were. Here's this game called Bully, but it's going to be pretty hard for them to, you know, really back up claims when it just doesn't have the violence and insanity that they want it to have. You know, now on the other hand, if Take-Two released something like, you know, Bully that was like Manhunt, is that what that game was? Yeah, Manhunt. Then we'd be in trouble, but it's not. It's T. Of course, who knows? Maybe the ESRB being messed up again, and we're going to find out it was actually rated AO or some junk like that because they've been doing such a great job. BioWare developing games for the DS. That's right. BioWare is developing for the DS. Can you imagine Baldur's Gate on the DS? Oh my God, that would be fantastic. Baldur's Gate 2 on the DS, I would buy that and play that again, and that would be great. Or even Baldur's Gate, like the PS2 game on the DS. Again, that'd be a fantastic. I really can't wait. BioWare is going to come out with an MMO. They're coming out with DS games. Who knows what the heck they're coming out with. But now they have so much money from their, when they joined Pandemic, these guys are just going to ramp up and go crazy. I love it. Microsoft is offering free repairs and refunds for people who bought the LaunchBox 360s. Anyone who bought one before January 1st, 2006, you can get it you can get it repaired for free, like me. So, yeah, mine just died. It was pretty terrible. I actually, for those of you who see me online all the time, I'm just Gaming Steve. That's my account. I'm online all the time watching movies. People are like, what the heck are you doing, Steve? Why are you always online watching movies? It's because that's what I use to actually watch Elmo and The Wiggles and stuff like that for my kids. So that's why it's always on, because my regular DVD player broke. By the way, it was a Sony DVD player, FYI. And that thing broke, but I did buy it like 7 years ago. Instead of getting a new one, I was like, you know what? I have a PS2 over here, and I have an Xbox 360. Why don't I use those? And sure enough, I popped in the 360, and it worked great. So that's why you can see me doing that. But I guess just, you know, 5,000 hours of The Wiggles was too much for my Xbox 360, and the drive died. So I'm sending it back. But now my PS2 is now playing The Wiggles nonstop. So we'll see how long that thing goes before it dies. What else do we have here? That story I've kind of done already. Up, here we go. ESRB might have to play every single game in its entirety because of this proposed legislation. So Republican Senator Sam Brownback was trying to get the ball rolling on this legislation, which would force the ESRB to play games in their entirety before they rate them. So the way it's done now, and I always wondered about that when I didn't know that much about the ESRB, how the heck they did it. It's what they do is that they have the publishers describe to them the absolute worst, most violent, heinous acts in the game, and to also send videotapes of these acts so that they can see what rating this game should get, as well as they also, you know, send them some other materials. But this way, they can look and say, okay, this is the, you know, this game has these type of acts of violence and this type of, you know, content, and then they can give it an appropriate rating. Now, that actually sounded like a pretty smart idea, because, you know, how else would you be able to get these? There's a lot of problems with being able to play games entirely. First, you know, these are supposed to be average people, the people who rate these games. These are not gamers. These are people who are moms, you know, they're younger kids. I mean, I don't know if they're younger kids because a lot of this stuff is secretive. But I do know for a fact that it is average non-gaming people. These are average Americans who rate these games. It's not like the super hardcore gamers. So is it really going to be possible for, I don't know, you know, your average, you know, Joe Schmo, who's not a hardcore gamer, to play, I don't know, Final Fantasy 13 all the way through from beginning to end? That's going to be awfully tough. And not only that, that could take a long time. And to see all the content, you know, that can take 100 hours, no problem. So the other thing with these games is, like, if you ever seen, it's like, especially with PC games, they go gold, and once they go gold, they get shipped. You know, they'll wait to the last possible minute to finish these games up, and then they're shipped. So this is really, really going to mess up the development cycle huge amounts, because how do they then put the game, you know, they have to do the packaging ahead of time, they have to do the advertising ahead of time. So, okay, picture this. You have the game, you finish it up. Now, you can't even print anything up. You have to send the gold master to the ESRB, have them play the game in its entirety, and especially if it's a big game, what will that take them? A day, a week, a month to finish? Then they give the rating, and now what if it's a rating then a what? What if they're trying to get a teen game, and instead they were getting, you know, they got an adult's, or not a mature game, so they get an M. So then what? They have to redo the whole game? They have to spend another couple of months to get a new rating? It's going to be a total nightmare. How else are they going to do this? And then, okay, then what if they already printed up the packaging? What are they going to do? Go and sticker it? You know, things like that. This is a total, it's one of those things that sounds really good, but to actually implement it, it's going to be really hard. Of course, I'm sure they'll figure out some way to streamline it so this is not so difficult, but still, I just, it's one of those things that sounds good in theory, and it does make sense. But practically, it's really going to be hard to enforce. This is not like seeing a movie. You know, it's like, yeah, this is what the Motion Picture Association does. But and they recut movies all the time, and they get new ratings. But it's easy for them to recut a movie. You can sit there and watch a movie for 2-3 hours. It's no big deal. But to play a game for 10, 20, 50, 100 hours, oh, it's going to be a lot of work. Let's see. Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, it sold 1.1 million units in just a few weeks after its September 12th release. Now, that's all. Here you go. Whenever you read these things, so it says, oh, it sold 1.1 million units. Well, yes, that's all combined. If you take the Xbox 360, PlayStation 2, Xbox, GameCube, PC, PlayStation, Portable, DS, and Game Boy Advance, and combine them all, you get 1.1 million copies sold so far. That's still super impressive. Don't get me wrong. That's a great amount. You know what? I never played the first one. I've heard awesome things about it. I've always wanted to. And I really want to play this one, but I don't know why. I just haven't had the time. But I do plan on playing it soon. Let's hurry up and finish the news. Let's see. Oblivion is coming for the PlayStation 3 as a launch title. That's pretty good news. Oblivion is one of my favorite games this year. I'm still playing it quite a bit. Actually, I like the PC version a little bit more. I just like the mouse and keyboard, even though I do have it for the Xbox 360. I was playing it a bit, but I just sort of like having the mouse and keyboard for the feel. But that's, you know, it's good, but... You know, again, I don't know if it's really going to be... If you haven't played Oblivion you're planning on getting PlayStation 3, get it, definitely. Like, that should be your launch title even before... even way before Resistance Fall of Man. I would definitely get that one. And I would say that's an early runner for the best game of 2006. Actually, I think Oblivion's going to be in a lot of... It's definitely going to always be in the top five, the best games of 2006, and it's probably going to be the best game of 2006 for a lot of people. Let's see. What else do we have? Last but not least, we have South Park is going to be starting their 10th season, and it's going to be centered around World of Warcraft. That's right. I knew about this a few weeks ago because my friend at Blizzard was telling me that, you know, they've been working with those guys and it's going to be on the premiere episode of South Park, but I didn't know that no one else knew. Otherwise, I probably would have written a little article about that from my site and broke the news. I didn't know about it. But yeah, I'm not sure exactly what they're going to be doing, but it's going to be, it takes place this Wednesday. Let's see, what do they say? Blah, blah, blah. Says elementary school kids Stan, Kyle, Cartman, and Kenny game slack-jawed at computer screens, morbidly obese and riddled with zits. So it doesn't say anything I didn't know already. So anyhow, they're going to, let's see, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, they're going to be talking about somehow World of Warcraft, but it looks like they're going to actually have the World of Warcraft animation and going on inside the game itself and sort of doing World of Warcraft animation. So it looks, there's a, like, I don't know where you find it. I guess it's on the South Park website, but you could actually download like a 15-second teaser, and even that was pretty fun. So I'm looking forward to that one. It's funny. I loved South Park when it first came out. I was a huge fan. I sort of got out of it, but I still watch it every so often, and I'm always impressed. Those guys really are pretty on top of the ball with that show. But that's all the news I had. There's probably about 10,000 stories I missed. I know. So whatever, just let me know and I'll try to cover it a little bit more detail next time, because hopefully I won't be going 6 weeks between shows, so I won't have to cover 10,000 pieces of news. But let's get to the next segment, which is the game review, where I talk about Rocket Slime. Yay!
Game review!
Welcome to Game Review, where I'm going to be talking about Rocket Slime for the Nintendo DS. Now, Rocket Slime it's an odd little game. It is probably a game you either own right now and you're enjoying quite a bit, or it's a game you looked at and said, wow, that thing looks way too kiddy and way too stupid. There's no way I'm going to buy that game. Well, for those of you who are in the latter camp who enjoy, games which are awful lot of fun, that have fantastic writing, some of the best pace I've ever seen in a video game, and, just will make you laugh out loud and have a great time, well, you're right, then don't buy this game. But for those of you who do enjoy your video games, go and buy this game right now, because yes, it is a great, fun, awesome game. The game might start off a little strange because it takes place, you're playing a slime, which for those of you who don't play Dragon Quest, is the lowliest form of monster in the Dragon Quest universe. It's also the unofficial mascot of Dragon Quest. The funny thing about this game is that, so you are playing the slime, which is this really small, itty bitty little thing that is, well, it's a slime. You can't really do anything except carry objects and sort of float a little bit and sort of rocket yourself around the landscape, but you have no hands or anything like that. In fact, even if you want to pick something up, you just sort of float it above your head. The controls are ridiculously simple, and at first when you start playing this game, you might think to yourself, wow, there's really not that much to do in this game. Well, you would be awfully wrong, because for those of you who are interested in game design, this game might have the absolute best pacing I think I've ever seen in a video game. It is perfectly paced. Every, I'd say, 15 to 20 minutes, you get something new and exciting to do in the game that opens up the game world just a little bit more. And it's that continuous exploration of the game that just keeps making you want to go back for more. And before you know it, you won't even realize what the heck's going on. You have dozens of options. There's tons of things going on. There's item collection. There's fights. There's a whole store where you can buy and sell things. There's all this exploration. It's just collections. It's nuts. It's like there's 20 different games in this game, and you're like, what the heck, wasn't this just like a simple game when you first started out? And yet you can't seem to get enough of it. Again, really unbelievably well designed game. So the game purposes, I don't really want to give too much away, but you play a little slime. You have to rescue 100 other slimes to save the world, and it's a little bit of fighting, a little bit of exploration, but throughout the game you have, I won't, again, try not to give it away, but there's a nice strategy game where you basically have these tanks fighting one another. It seems really simplistic at first, but it's actually really pretty tricky. There's a multiplayer aspect that is really great. It's a fun tactical game, so if you like, you know, tactical games, you're going to be surprised how deep that game actually is. The graphics, yeah, they look totally childlike and kiddie, and they're fantastic. They're perfectly done. You get to see this whole subculture of the slimes, get to see all the different people in the slime village and what they have, different jobs and what they do, and there's like chefs, and there's people in the church, and then there's the government slimes, and there's the artist slimes. It's crazy. And then eventually you can start capturing monsters, and then you have the monsters in the village. It sounds bizarre. It sounds weird. It sounds like, what the heck am I talking about? Trust me, this game is fantastic. I really have not been able to put it down. I play a little bit every single day. I'm up to the very end. I haven't come to the very, very end because I don't want to finish the game. It's just so much fun. It's like I actually have said to myself, I don't want to finish the very, very end of the game because it will come to an end. And I just haven't had this much fun in a game in a really long time. For the first hour, you're probably going to say, what the heck am I doing? But give it a shot. You'll play it for an hour or two. You'll start to see, you know, it'll slowly get its hooks into you. And within 3 or 4 hours, you will be solidly sworn on this game. It's great. Great. A little easy, but you know what? Sometimes you just need a little easy. You know, if you're looking for a super hard, challenging, crazy game, this is not it. If you're looking for a light game that has a lot of adventure, a lot of fun, a lot of exploration, and amazing pacing, then this is the game for you. Rocket Slime, I give it a 5 out of 5. Fantastic game. One of my favorite of the year. And let's get to the retro review, which is Shining Force.
Gaming Steve's Retro Review.
So I haven't done a retro review in quite some time, and the main reason is just because I haven't been able to really find a game I thought that was really good. But this is the first time that I think I actually did a retro review. I have both games in my DS. I'm actually looking at this. I have Rocket Slime at the top slot, and I have Shining Force Resurrection of the Dark Dragon in the bottom slot. So I can actually carry around both games at the same time, play them whenever I want. For those of you who really love strategy games, especially the Fire Emblem games, then Shining Force is the game for you. This is the game that started it all. Way back when, in the late 80s, there came out a game called Shining Force in Japan, where it was a huge hit. They then came out with two versions in the US. They came out with Shining Force 1 and then Shining Force 2 for the Genesis. There was a Shining Force 3, I believe, for the Sega. Was it the Saturn? Was it the Saturn or Atari Saturn? I forgot what it was for, actually, but I never played it. In Japan, there's a lot of these games, but it is a very similar structure as the Fire Emblem games. You lead a small ragtag group of adventurers that go around and get into a series of tactical battles. And that's pretty much the whole game. There is a storyline, and the storyline is actually quite good. There's exploration in the game where you can sort of explore in villages, go and buy and sell things, put together your team, but then you're basically told to go on adventures and to actually, you know, take place of tactical combat. But again, just like Fire Emblem, it is one-on-one combat where you have, you know, monsters fighting knights, fighting magic users, fighting axe wielders, spear throwers. Everyone's a little different. You know, it's a very elaborate rock, paper, scissors. The terrain will give you a defensive bonus. So if you're fighting on plains, you're going to take a lot more damage than if you're fighting in the mountains. Flying units, you know, will have disadvantage to archers, things like that. This, since this is the very first one that I know of that really utilized the system, it's very simple. It's a very, very simple game. There's not a lot to it. There's actually only really four choices you could ever make, and one of them is always exit. So there's only really three choices at any time, three to four choices for any one unit. So it's not a hugely deeply combat system, but it's still a ton of fun. They came out with Shining Force for the Game Boy Advance not too long ago. And as I said, it's called Shining Force Resurrection of the Dark Dragon. And this is actually Shining Force 1 for the Genesis, redone for the Game Boy Advance. They actually added some new features. They cleaned it up. And it's still a great game. And the best part about it all is that you can go and buy this game brand new for $15. At least that's what I got. I got a brand new for $15 in the store. Went to GameStop, no problem. And you could probably even find it used even less, probably for $10, $12. And if you like tactical strategy games, especially if you like Fire Emblem, you should go and buy this game right now, because you'll get to see where all those games came from. It is simple. I will say this is a very light game. If your guys die, no big deal. They die and then you get them back later in the game. You know, it's really simple. It's not like Fire Emblem where if your guys die, they're dead forever, which actually I think is a little harsh. This one, they die, big deal. You get them later. But it has a very similar system where you're leveling up your people and then you could actually change their classes, so they go to a more, you know, a more advanced class. The story itself is quite good. The, you know, number of units, they interact with each other, they're telling stories, you find out backgrounds and histories, you know, for all these units, and it's really, really beautiful graphics. The Genesis version was phenomenal. You know, it had a sort of a simulated 3D look and feel, and it was like, ooh, my God, look at that thing, wow, 3D graphics. Of course, it's totally fake, but it still holds up to this day, and I really enjoy this game. So, for those of you who enjoy tactical strategy games, even if you played Advance Wars, that's another one. If you like Advance Wars, you get this game. It's very similar, and I fully recommend it. I did hear that there's actually a Shining Force. They're coming out with a new one for, I think it's the PlayStation 2, in a few months. They didn't really have any news or information on it. They did come out with one a couple of months or a year ago, but that was a weird dichotomy of, like, I don't know. It was like, I don't know what the heck it was, actually. It was sort of a strange, like, role-playing game, action role-playing game. It was nothing to do with strategic tactical combat. So ignore that one for the PS2. That's not anything like these. But there's also even cell phone versions of this game in Japan. I've never seen it. I've always actually been really curious to try them. If anyone's ever played it or knows even how to get Japanese games on your cell phone in the U.S., I'd love to know, because I would just love to try to play this game. But there we go. That is my retro review for Shining Force for the Genesis and the Game Boy Advance and a whole bunch of other systems. And let's get to my new segment called Making the Game.
Special feature!
So this is the new segment called Making the Game, where I am going to tell you guys what it takes from a developer point of view to make and sell and publish a game from beginning to end. So this week, I'm going to talk about, okay, how the heck do you even get a game made? Like, what's the first step? Because a lot of people say to me, or say to, well, everyone I know, really, hey, you know what? I have a great idea for a game. You know what? That's good. You know what? There's a million good ideas for games. You know, just because I have a really good idea for a movie, or a really good idea for a book, or a really good idea for a song, doesn't mean it's going to be made into a movie, a book, or a song. I'll tell you that right now. And it might seem a little harsh, but I'm going to probably be a little harsh in this segment, because it's not easy, and you have to really know what you're doing. Game ideas are dime a dozen. They really are. It's not hard to come up with a game idea. What is going to sell your game, though? Why is your game going to get picked over someone else's? And I'll tell you how. The first thing you need to realize is that publishers, who are the people that you're going to go to actually get your game published, have a set quota of what they're looking for. They have certain types of games. Then you have to try to figure out what those are. For example, if you go to Electronic Arts and say to them, hey, you know what? I have a really great idea for a football game. They're probably not going to buy it from you because they have something called, oh, I don't know, Madden. So they don't really need to have another football game in their lineup. So that's one of the big secrets, is that you really need to know what publishers are looking for. They're usually looking for very specific types of titles. Now, Electronic Arts, you know, they're usually looking for not really new ideas. They're usually looking for things like, oh, I don't know, licenses, or companies that are really good at making games so that they can then, EA can give their license to a company that can actually make the game. So EA is probably not exactly the best place to look if you're trying to sell an original idea. However, if you're a really good programmer or really good at making games, that's probably a place you want to go. So usually, if you have a new idea, the best place to go is a smaller developer, like an Activision or even a Take-Two or even much smaller developers than that. There's a lot of, like, you know, smaller independent developers that then actually get, you know, they almost subcontract and go to larger developers like an Activision, or even, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like a Steam. They're, you know, sort of, they'll do a little stranger kind of retro weird type games, and they'll probably be more interested in your ideas. Now, what will happen is that, how the heck do you know what these publishers are looking for? How the heck do you know, okay, let's say I'm going to set up a meeting somehow with Activision. How the heck do I know what am I going to sell them? Well, I really don't know what to tell you there. You just sort of have to know. I mean, at the same time, you have to go through their list of catalog of games to see what they have and what they don't have. If they don't have a specific type of genre of game or a different type, you know, specific type of game, you might want to approach them and you know, and be able to say, hey, look, I have this type of game. It'll fit this niche within your upcoming release schedule, because it doesn't look like you have one. Now, this is what games are kept secretive, because you might not know that, oh, in reality, yeah, you're looking to do, I don't know, a rodeo game. Just coming to my head, you know. Okay, oh, yeah, we don't have a rodeo game right now. We have this really great idea for this rodeo game. Well, they might be secretly have in development for the last 3 years a rodeo game, so they might turn you down because they already have something in their segment. When I sold my game, I actually was able to meet with my publisher and talk to them about what they were looking for. And that's really the best way to do it, is that you sort of talk to them, get some ideas. You know, they were finishing up publishing one game. They were looking for a new game to publish. And I spoke to them and said, you know, like, what are you guys trying to find to buy? And, you know, we discussed it, and I told them sort of, you know, my ideas of what they were looking at. And I gave them a couple of ideas what I thought was going to be really good for their market, for their publishing schedule. And you know what? After that, I was able to put together a proposal, and it really worked. But that's next show. I'm not really going to talk about the proposal stage. I'm really talking about trying to figure out what you're trying to sell to them. So really, that's the very first step, is that, you know, you might have the greatest game on earth. You might have this awesome real-time strategy game that you think is going to be really, really great property. But you know what? If you might try to sell that real-time strategy game to Take-Two, and they're not interested in a real-time strategy game, or Activision, and they're not interested in a real-time strategy game, or EA, or Microsoft, or who else, all of them are probably going to say, if they're not interested in one, that they are not going to buy it from you. And they're just, and it could be a great game. Sometimes, if you get to that stage, you know, I would almost try to, you know, talk to people if you can, whether you go to conferences and just sort of talk to publishers and just, you know, get a feel from them as to what they're looking for. And it sounds crazy. It sounds like, well, that's insane. You can't really do that. Well, you can. I mean, these are people are human beings, and they're just the same as you and me. And I do it all the time. I'll be talking to these guys, and I'll be saying, oh, you know, what's coming out? And I'll just say, you know, it's like, well, what are you guys looking for? And, you know, what are you guys looking to put out? And you'd be amazed how often people will say, oh, you know, we're looking for this type of game. It's really unbelievable. It sounds like almost too easy to be true. It is. It sometimes is that easy, is that you can just find out, like, what type of games they're looking for. And they prefer that because they don't want to waste their time. They would rather read through 10 proposals of 10 ideas of games that they're actually interested in publishing than 500 proposals for games they will never publish, even if it's the greatest game on earth, because they just don't have room in their schedule. They can only release a limited number of games. They have limited budgets, limited time, so they can't release, you know, even if it's 50 of the greatest real-time strategy games ever made by humankind, they're not going to release all of them because they just don't have enough time and effort and budget to release 50 games. So it's really very tricky. A good example is, another one is Xbox Live Arcade. You know, if you come to them right now and say, I have a really great idea for a poker game, well, they already have a poker game. They don't really need another poker game. But if you come to them and you have a really good idea for another type of game that's not in the genre of, you know, that they have released right now, or something that's really unique, they'll probably be more interested in talking to you. Or better yet, exploring, you know, if they like your idea, they might come back to you and say, you know what, that's a good idea. We don't really need something exactly like that, but we need something similar, maybe you can refine your idea. So again, that's really the very, very, very first step, is to find and talk to a publisher and give them an idea of what they're actually looking for to buy. It sounds too easy to be true. It sounds almost ridiculous, but that alone will increase your chances by 1,000,000%. I mean, it really will. That is how you sell a game. It's really, really that simple. So next time, I'm going to talk a little bit more. It's like, okay, now you actually have an idea of what type of game genre they're interested in. How do you then put together a proposal? How do you actually get that out to them? And then what are they looking for inside the proposal? You know, and I'll get to that next time. But with that, let's get to Name That Game.
Name That Game!
Hey, welcome to Name That Game. It's the... well, I'd say weekly contest, except this hasn't been a week. It's where I will play a small snippet, and you have to tell me what is that game and what platform is it from. So let's listen to my last entry. Here we go. So a lot of people wrote in on this one, and a lot of people wrote to me and said that it was Prey. And maybe it was, but it's not. It is not Prey. I know a lot of people, I'd say about 40% of the entries, said, oh, that's really easy, it's Prey. Well, it's not. I'm sorry. No, that was actually Guitar Hero. Yes, Guitar Hero. So let's see who got this one correct. Wow, 2 weeks in a row, and I know what your game clip is. Luckily, I am also playing through this game at the moment. Too bad. I suck at hard mode on Guitar Hero. I might be the next rock god. Keep up the good work on the podcast. Kerry Smith from Huntsville, Alabama. You know, I should just qualify you, because you didn't say for the PS2, but I'm going to let you have it, because Guitar Hero is only for the PS2, and it doesn't really matter. So yes, it is Guitar Hero. The reason is that if you hear, there's like little times when you actually hit the chords incorrectly, and it's sort of these off notes, and it's sort of in there. That's how you can tell it was Guitar Hero as opposed to Prey. But yeah, it was easy, but not that easy. So let's listen to this week's entry and see if anyone knows what this one is.
If you decide to join us, rendezvous at the Akuda Bar. Ask for peepers. You're free to choose your side, Jade.
Did you say peepers?
Mm-hmm. At the Akuda Bar. Be sure to remember the password. Safe and sound in its shell, the precious pearl is the slave of the currents.
Security measure?
Discretion is the key. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot your reward. Hope to see you soon, Miss Jade!
So, just what does Miss Jade think about all this hoop nanny?
If there's a way to stop this war, we can't let it pass us by.
So if you think you know what that is, write to me, game@gamingsteve.com, and just tell me the name of the game and the platform, and I will randomly choose someone who gets it correctly and give you guys a prize. Kerry Smith, write to me. You know, send me your address so I can send you something. And I think I owe a whole bunch of people some stuff, and I'm going to send that out soon. Actually, I got to restock all my equipment of game stuff, because I don't really have that much. I had a whole bunch of swag, but it disappeared. I don't know where all my great swag went. So I'm going to have to get some new stuff. So once again, if you think you know what that was, write to me, game@gamingsteve.com. Tell me the name of the game and the platform, and good luck to you, man. And let's get to show mail.
Show mail!
Mail.
Hey, welcome to Show Mail, where I answer your questions, both audio and written. And it has been so long since I've done the show. A lot of the questions that people wrote me were really not that relevant. And so I'm actually going to just take one question that was relevant. So instead, for those of you who want to send me something, you can just write to me feedback@gamingsteve.com. If you want to send me an MP3, you could just send me an MP3 of your question, 30 seconds or less, please, with your name. If it's a little bit over, that's fine. Just don't try to go too crazy, and I will answer your question on the air. And if you want, you can also just write me an email question. And I only got one because it's the only one that's really relevant. The question is from Doug, and he writes, "Dear Gaming Steve, do you think the World of Warcraft expansion Burning Crusade is going to be coming out this year? Thanks, love the show." Yeah, I actually do think that, yes, it is going to come out this year. They are killing themselves over at Blizzard to get this thing done, to get this thing out before the end of the year, before Christmas. So those of you who like WoW and are looking forward to the Burning Crusade, it is going to come out. What shape it's going to be in, I do not know. That is one tricky part. However, the one thing with them is like, it's an MMO. You can just patch it forever, which is true. And they kind of did that with the original. So take it with a grain of salt. I mean, this thing is review. It's totally review proof, though. I mean, you know, if this thing can come out, as long as it's pretty good, people are going to buy it. And well, I can't say that much about it, but from what I know and what I've been hearing and from what everything I've been hearing them trying to do is, yes, the Burning Crusade is going to try to – they're killing themselves to get this thing to come out this year. They do not want to miss Christmas, and I think it is going to come out come hell or high water. And that's really unlike Blizzard, because Blizzard usually likes to wait until it is done. They will not release something until it's done. And they usually release things like in February or March, because, you know, they don't make it. But it's been 2 years. It really would be nice if they can make it this year in time for Christmas. If not, you know, the game will still sell, but it just will miss that big momentum push that they can really get. Plus, it's been, you know, they really don't want to go yet another year without this thing coming out. And they did announce recently that they're going to try to come out with a major expansion every single year. And actually, I believe they can, because they've been ramping up their team for a while now. They're really, you know, been spending a lot of time, a lot of energy to really ramp up their team to make it real strong so they can come out with these things and churn them out on a regular basis once a year. And plus, when you're talking about that much money, if you can come out with a new expansion every single year and charge, oh, I don't know, $40-$50 for the expansion, yeah, it's, again, that's a big no-brainer. It's like, you know what, if they need to hire a couple 100 people to get this thing done, yeah, it's probably worth it, since it only makes about $1 billion a year. I think a couple 100 programmers and designers really are just going to bust the bank there. So yeah, do look forward to that game. So that's it. That's all the questions I have. That is the shortest show mail I've ever had in my entire life. But if you have any more questions, write to me at feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I will get them on the air. And with that, let's get to final thoughts. So this is probably the shortest Gaming Steve I think I've ever done. It's like, I'm looking, it's only been an hour and a minute right now. So that's pretty, it's pretty short. But as I said, I'm probably going to have to start making these things shorter, just because time constraints. I'm really going to have to cut these things down a bit. But usually the show mail takes a good hour sometimes to do. So that could be the other reason. If I had 50 letters or what I normally have, that I usually can just fill a half an hour to an hour of show mail, no problem. So, let's see, what is going on in the gaming world? Well, I'm always trying to play. I always have a split. I'm always playing regular games, you know, like the Rocket Slimes and the World of Warcrafts and the D&D Online and the Caesar 4s of the world. But then another half of my time, I'm always looking to play the crazy, weird games that no one's playing. Like right now, I'm playing Puzzle Pirates with a whole bunch of my friends. If you haven't played this game, man, it is fun. It's free, sort of. It's a free game. It is called Yo-Ho-Ho Puzzle Pirates. It's a MMO puzzle game, if that makes sense. And it has Oh, I don't know. It just has a lot of puzzles in it. But it's a crazy game where you're actually, like, if you're trying to sell on ships, you have to actually solve puzzles, and that makes the ships go. So there's a puzzle that will increase the sails and increase the speed of the ship. There's a puzzle that will actually bilge water out of the ship. There's a puzzle that will fill holes in the ship. There's puzzles for firing cannons. There's sword fighting puzzles when you're fighting pirates, things like that. It's so much fun. It's a very sociable game. I actually spend a lot of time in the parlor because there's like poker, there's hearts and spades. I play a lot of hearts. One of my friends is ranked nationally. He's a very, very good hearts player. So he and I usually come online and play every night or so. We'll play a few rounds of hearts, and it's a lot of fun to play with him. Otherwise, I just wouldn't get to play with him because he doesn't really live near me. So, but I mean by it's free, though, sort of, is because, yes, it's a completely free game, but you need to buy a badge to play certain things. Like, for instance, Hearts is free twice a week. I think it's like on Sundays and on Tuesdays. It's free to play for anyone. But any other days of the week, you have to buy a badge. The badges aren't that much. The badges, you can buy a badge that will let you play Hearts for, I think, like 30 days. And the badges cost things called the blooms. Now, the blooms can be bought for like 25 cents each. So it's not that expensive. What you do is you can buy the blooms, or if you're really good at the game, you can just use these things called pieces of eight and actually convert your, you know, you can win bet pieces of eight, get say 10,000 pieces of eight, and then convert that to like 25 doubloons. And then you can use your doubloons to buy things in the game, whether you want to buy, you know, badges that'll let you play and access areas of the game that are usually locked, or, you know, that's how really the game works. That's one thing I noticed about this game, if you do try it, is the documentation really sucks. It's absolutely hard. It's really hard to figure out what the heck's going on. This game's been out for 2 years. I've tried to play it for a long time. I just never quite got it, and I still don't totally quite get the game, but it's really, really poorly designed in terms of teaching you what the heck's going on, because it's very confusing. There's this pieces of eight, there's just the blooms. You're like, what the heck? Why did the blooms cost me money? But that's all you really need to know. Pieces of eight are the in-game currency. They can be exchanged for doubloons, and doubloons can be exchanged for pieces of eight. Doubloons are used to actually buy things in the real world, and you can also buy doubloons using real-world currency at approximately 25 cents per doubloon. But you know what? If you don't want to deal with any of that, then just play the game in itself, and it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of, you know, if you're already big into casual games and into puzzles, you might as well play this, because this way, at least if you're playing these puzzle games, you actually get some experience, you could actually get some gold, you could actually increase your pirate status and play with other friends. And most of these games, if not all of them, are multiplayer, or at least just some multiplayer aspect to them, and that's what's also a lot of fun, is that the sword fighting game is kind of like a Tetris Columns type game, and it's you can play against other people, and it's really quite a bit of fun. Almost every game you'll notice is sort of a ripoff or a homage, if you will, to a more popular a puzzle game you've played before, but they do a really good job, and there's a couple of original games in there which are a ton of fun. So definitely check out Puzzle Pirates. It's a good game. I'm on pretty often. I'm on the Sage Ocean, so if you get in the game, let me know, and I'll holler. The game's very friendly. In fact, you can't even, like, there's little things like you can't even make friends with people unless you actually meet them in real life. It's very, very family friendly. They do that on purpose, so you actually have to meet up with people, and then you can make them friends, so you can't just sort of, like, you know, spam people and do crazy things like that. So anyhow, and it plays even in your browser. So if you want to play at work, oh, did I say that? Don't play at work. Even though my friends play at work all the time. And well, if you work for a game company like I do, you can play all you want at work, because you know what? That's your job. Isn't that great? Well, with that, I am going. I am going to call it a night and put the show together, and see you guys next week on Gaming Steve. And until then, have a good gaming week, and I will try to wrangle up these two kids I now have, and I will play a little bit of Puzzle Pirates and then go to sleep and root my Mets on in the playoffs. So I will talk to you guys later. See ya. Bye.
listening to Gaming Steve. If you have a question or comment for Steve, please drop him a line at GamingSteve.com. Been listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week,
viva la dance revolution!